Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om namo Bhagavate.
Reading from 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, almost the very end of the Gita, verse number 65. Krishna is giving his final instructions to Arjuna, most confidential advice. Manmana bhavamad bhakto
Manmana bhavamad bhakto
Madhyaji mam namaskuru
Madhyaji mam namaskuru
Mame vaishyasi satyam te
Mame vaishyasi satyam te
Ati jane priyosi me
Ati jane priyosi me
Manmana bhavamad bhakto
Manmana bhavamad bhakto
Madhyaji mam namaskuru
Madhyaji mam namaskuru
Mam evaishyasi satyam te
Mam evaishyasi satyam te
Pratijani priyosi me
Pratijani priyosi me
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Jai Shri
Prabhupada. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Can everyone hear me? I can hear it. Okay. Yes.
I just get some.
Purport. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. Notice, if anybody's interested, that Prabhupada says, return to the abode of Krishna, which presumes we were there before. You don't return to a place where you never were before. Continuing the purport. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend of Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna. The very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to the other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. And this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Krishna has, in these 18 chapters, discussed various subjects with Arjuna. He has discussed Karma Yoga, how to work without attachment, Buddhi Yoga, how to apply your intelligence to the Supreme, in other words, to dedicate all your work for the Supreme, meditation, and many other processes Krishna has described. And then he's in the, especially in the middle six chapters, he's described the process of devotional service to him. Now he's summing up. He's giving his final conclusion. Sarva bhuyatamam bhuya shrinume paramambachaha. Now I will tell you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear it from me. And then he speaks this verse and the next verse. I think most of us know what the next verse is. Sarva dharmam paricha. Give everything up and just surrender to me. So here, in this verse, Krishna is describing the perfection of life. If we're willing to hear it, we can learn everything in this one verse. We don't even have to read the rest of the Bhagavad Gita if we don't have time. Or we're impatient to get that perfection. We can't even wait the few hours it may take to read the whole Bhagavad Gita. And we certainly don't want to spend years and a whole lifetime reading so many different shastras. So here is the summation of all divine wisdom, of all the wisdom of the Vedas encapsulated in one shloka. Just Krishna saying. Now it makes a difference not only who's saying it, not only what's being said, but it's essential to understand who's saying it. I'm speaking the verse, but I certainly don't mean me. Krishna's talking, he means himself. Be my devotee. Manmana, first of all, always think of me. Your mind, manmana means your mind should be fixed on me. Be my devotee. Worship me and bow down to me. Four things. Simple. Do these four things. Of course, there's a pronoun there. When you have a pronoun, you have to think. Who is that pronoun referring to? Me. Who's the me? It's simple. Who's speaking here? Vasudev, Krishna, the friend of Arjuna. Prabhupada defines, for those of us who still may be in doubt, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. Okay, this is me. The me who is speaking. Some commentator on the Gita has said, when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean me. He doesn't mean himself. He means the unborn within himself. This is an unusual use of a pronoun. Why can't we be simple about it? When somebody says me, he means him, himself. When Krishna says me, he means Krishna, the person who's talking to Arjuna. He's telling Arjuna. Arjuna is Krishna's friend. They all along have had a very intimate, casual relationship. They eat together. They sit together on the same bed and joke together. Arjuna treats Krishna like an equal, but now he's become serious. Krishna has revealed to him not that he didn't know before, but his intimate relationship with Krishna, sometimes he gets too intimate. Saketi matva prasavam yaruktam. I'm sorry. I've been thinking all along that I'm simply your friend. You're my friend. And I may have audaciously even insulted you. Hey, Krishna. Hey, Yadava. Hey, Saketi, my friend. Yadava, Krishna. I forget who I'm talking to. Maya pramadat pranayenavapi. Out of delusion, or maybe you can say out of love, I've been too friendly with you, not maintaining an understanding. You're God. But now, please forgive me for all of that. I'm ready to surrender to you as your disciple and your devotee. Please instruct me properly. So Krishna's telling him, simply this, think of me. This is why my spiritual master, our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, I may have taken initiation from Prabhupada, but everyone associated with this ISKCON movement is a Shiksha disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So we disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Shiksha disciples, have been given this movement. Prabhupada did not, although he created the movement, he insisted that he always be referred to, that no official document, book or anything else, signpost, anything, should fail to indicate Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He wanted to make it clear that he is the establisher of the society. But he also said, I've given the society to you. I'm giving you my instructions, but it's up to you, my disciples, to decide what you want to do with it. So he's given us the society to manage on his behalf, to carry out on his behalf. Maybe we should understand what he's given us then. If you're appointed officer of a corporation, you may be new to the corporation, so you'd better find out what the business of the corporation is. How can you function otherwise? So we have been given the responsibility to fulfill the mission of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Maybe we should try to clearly understand what this society is for. Again, just look at the words. We can be complicated about it, or we can simply look. What is this? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He could have named it something else. His well-intentioned friends in New York in 1965, when he incorporated ISKCON, they asked, why don't you call it Society for God Consciousness? That'll have a broader appeal. Why limit it to Krishna? But Prabhupada insisted, no. This is for the development of consciousness of Krishna, following the instruction of Krishna. It was Krishna who named the society. He said, Manmana, think of me. So that's where Prabhupada gets his idea. This is for Krishna consciousness, because that's Krishna's, the first thing in the final instruction, the first clause is, always think of me. So that's what this institution is existing for carrying out Krishna's instruction. Always think of me. Why? Why does Krishna want us to always think of him? It's not just that he's a politician trying to win the popularity polls, that they're going to take statistics tomorrow, so he wants to have a good count. It's for our benefit. When we are absorbed in thought of Krishna, if you think about Krishna, you cannot help but be attracted to him. If you become attracted to Krishna, then you will lose attraction to all inferior material things of this world. And all the reasons why you're suffering and confusion will cease to be. If you simply think of Krishna constantly and fully, then you won't think of Maya, and you won't have any trouble again. Well, to speak of the transcendental ecstasy, unbelievable, incredible pleasure involved in simply being Krishna conscious. So Manmana, just think about me. Of course, Krishna says, he says, back in the 12th chapter, Mayeva Mana Adhatsva. Arjuna, it's simple. Just fix your mind on me. Like a young man in love with a young woman, or vice versa. It is spontaneous. The person in love cannot help but always think of the beloved. So, be like that. Always think of me. Be attracted to me. That will change your life. Mayi Bodham Niveshya. And use your intelligence how you can approach me and how you can serve me. That is Krishna's first recommendation. Just do that. But we're trying to do it, and it's not easy. Because we're still affected by material influences. We stubbornly will not give up our material attachments, so we can't simply think of Krishna 24 hours a day. We're just not willing to do it immediately. Krishna says, okay, Arjuna, that would have been the best thing. But ata chittam samadhatum na shaknosi mahi stiram abhyasa yogena tato mam ichaptum dananjaya. Arjuna, that's okay. I understand. You have some conditioning. You can't surrender immediately, completely. If you can't completely fix your mind on me 24 hours a day without any deviation, then try this instead. Abhyasa yoga. Try practicing the regulated system of bhakti yoga. And that's what Krishna is describing in this verse. First of all, if you can do it, just think of Krishna. If you can't, then practice. Practice how to serve, how to think of Krishna. If you can't do it spontaneously. The practice is the other three clauses. Bhavamad Bhakto, be my devotee. Everybody belongs to somebody. Nobody is independent. We say that God is independent. But actually, Krishna is not independent. He has sold himself out to his devotees. Krishna is not free to do whatever he wants. Why is it that Krishna plays the flute in Vrindavan, but he doesn't play it in Dwarka? Ever think of that? He's embarrassed to take out his flute in Dwarka. He's the same person, but he doesn't feel the same in Dwarka. You know, he just keeps the flute hidden somewhere, under his belt. You know, he can't, you know, in the court of the Yadavas start, you know, playing the flute. He can't do it. He's responsive to the mood of his devotees. God gives up his independence because he feels obliged to his devotees' love. So nobody's independent, not even God. Everybody belongs to somebody else. It's just a question of who you're going to give yourself to. Who are you going to follow? Who are you going to serve? Who are you going to obey? So Krishna says, choose me. Be my devotee. You're going to be somebody's devotee anyway. Prabhupada comments elsewhere in the Gita. Everybody has the need to love. If you have no family members, then you get a pet dog and you love your dog. Everybody needs to give his love to someone. So be my devotee, Krishna advises. Practice that. It's an adjustment of consciousness. This is how we begin the practice. All my life, all my repeated births and deaths for many lifetimes, I've served so many inferior masters. I don't remember even whom. Now let me change that and serve the Supreme Lord. It's a decision of intelligence, of the heart. Anybody can make it. You just have to theoretically even decide. I want to give my life to the Supreme Lord. Why serve these inferior masters? Why not serve the Lord of the heart, who is everybody's best friend? So become Krishna's devotee. Make up your mind to do that. That's the advice he's giving Arjuna. And through Arjuna, who is being the example, he's advising everybody. Bhava mad bhakto. Okay, I'm Krishna's devotee. I agree. I surrender. This is an interesting word, surrender. Of course, the Sanskrit word is prapadye. It doesn't mean really the same thing as the English word surrender. You say surrender in English, you get the impression, the idea in the mind, that the bank robber is being chased by the police in their car, he's in his car. Finally, they corner him in a street with no exit. Jumps out of the car, against the wall, he puts his hands up, I surrender. I give up. That's the English word, surrender, the idea we get. But that's not what Krishna means when he talks about surrendering to him. The Sanskrit word has a different connotation, even a different meaning. Prapad means to approach someone voluntarily, to take shelter. We should not just when our hands are up against the wall, and it's either surrender or get your head blown off. But voluntarily, of our own choice, approach Krishna to take shelter of him. That's what we translate into the English word surrender. So, okay, I agree, I surrender. I should be Krishna's devotee. Now what am I supposed to do? Krishna gives the next two clauses. Madhyaji and Mam Namaskuru. This is simple formula, what to do. Do worship me. This is the word yaj, to worship. Of course, that has to be understood. Does it mean just ring a bell and wave a lamp at Krishna? Not only that. That's a ritual, and that is also worship. But Krishna says, everything you do should be an offering unto me. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhosi didasi yat. So juhosi, what you offer in sacrifice, that's included. But also, whatever you do, whatever you eat, should be offered to me. These are basic elements of Krishna consciousness. Who is a Vaishnav? A Vaishnav is someone who offers everything he eats to Krishna, to God first. That's a Vaishnav. Who doesn't eat food that has not been offered to the Supreme Lord. Whatever you do, whatever austerity you perform, whatever sacrifice you make, do it tat kurusha madarpanam. Do that as an offering unto me. That's what Krishna means in the one phrase, madhyaji, be my worshipper, which includes everything you might do. Do it for me. You're my devotee, then you're working for me now. We work for an employer, but we're not his slave. We work for him 40 hours a week, but when I go home, I'm free. But we make a contract with Krishna to work for him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we don't mind it because Krishna is not an exploitive employer like most others. He's not a greedy capitalist who's simply trying to make a profit off of my labor. I will benefit much more than Krishna benefits. So I bother to make his rajboga. I make him some rice, dal, and chapatis. Krishna accepts it, but he doesn't need it. Krishna has hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha cooking lunch for him. He doesn't need another few rotis from me. But he wants the love. So I'm getting more from the deal than Krishna's getting from me. And I'm not being unfairly exploited, even if I give myself 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, every drop of my energy and attention to Krishna, I will not be the loser. I'll be profiting. Therefore, Krishna advises, worship me, serve me. You won't be cheated. And then last, Mam Namaskuru. Bow down to me. Some people don't want to bow down to anybody. But Vedic culture, the culture that still shows some of its remnants in India, is a culture of respect. The culture that India is trying now to emulate, the modern, multinational, faceless, immoral, whatever I can say about it, I better not say it, culture, is exploitative. It's a culture of selfishness. You know, we're happy to have free market. That market is based on greed. Make money and enjoy. That's the purpose of it. Why else? You know, develop more and more material facility for sense gratification and comfort. Of course we should have the basic necessities. And why not be comfortable? But why do we have to base our whole society on the pursuit of greed? So the Vedic culture is much superior. It is a traditional, natural culture based on respect and duty. And ultimately, it's based on love. What we see in the in ancient Bharat Varsha, the civilized Vedic culture, is a replica of the transcendental culture of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, where all the inhabitants of Vaikuntha have pure love for the Supreme Lord. They have respect because they have love, and they serve out of love, not just out of duty. Beyond that, they're motivated by love. So the ultimate motivation in Vedic culture should be love of God. If we lack love of God, if we don't have it, then we should be motivated by duty. And those who don't have an understanding of the science of serving God, they may have a more sentimental, an inferior idea of God consciousness. They fear God. They're God-fearing, and they serve Him because they're afraid to go to hell. But that's third class. Third class is to serve God out of fear. Second class is to serve out of duty. But first class is to simply serve out of love. In either case, first, second, or third class, we should submit to Krishna. And we should stop. We cannot approach Krishna as another object of exploitation. He's not another customer. He's not another person to take advantage of before he takes advantage of you. You can't deal with the Supreme Lord like that. The only proper approach is to simply submit yourself. Offer yourself to Him. Please use me. Accept me as your servant. That's what it means to bow down. And when you're offering pranam to anybody, you're doing that. You call somebody Prabhu. In ISKCON, this is our title for everybody. Everybody's Prabhu. We misuse it. We get too familiar. Prabhu, you're giving me a hard time. Prabhu is a title of respect. It means master. When you say it, you're submitting yourself. We bow down. We offer respect, homage to one another. That's because we recognize that a devotee as representative of God. God, we're servants of God, therefore we're servants of the servants of God. In fact, it's better to be the servant of the servant of the servant than to try to directly be the servant of God. Better to be indirectly. So, our culture, the Vedic culture, and certainly the Krishna conscious culture, is symbolized by this act of bowing down, of pranam. Nowadays, it's too much after you get down on the ground. So, just this, or just, grabbing somebody's knees. This is the modern version of pranam. But the principle is there, is to admit your superior, I'm your subordinate. I'm ready to serve you, not to use you. You use me, please. Mam namaskuru. It makes a big difference who's speaking here. If some politician got up and spoke this verse, I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't listen to him. Be my devotee. Worship me. Serve me. Bow down to me. Forget it. Yeah. But because Krishna's speaking, I can trust him. It matters not only what you know, but who you know. The fact that the person speaking these words and demanding this unconditional surrender deserves it means that this is authoritative knowledge because of who is speaking it and because of who is hearing it. Pratijane priyosime. Krishna says, do these four things and you will come back to me. You will regain your real spiritual life. You will enjoy with me, Krishna, eternally, in the place where you really belong. I promise you this, Pratijane. Why? Because you're my dear friend and devotee, Priyosime. So it matters who's speaking, and it matters who's listening. When the Lord is speaking and the devotee is listening, then you have a real communication. Similarly, when the Vaishnava spiritual master is speaking and the faithful disciple is listening, then there is real transmission of knowledge. Nayam atma balahine na labhya. The Lord of Death, Yama, spoke these words to Nachiketa, 5-year-old boy, but he had great faith. And therefore, Yamaraj took him seriously and gave him serious spiritual instructions. But he warned him that this transcendental being, the soul, cannot be understood, balahinena, by one who lacks spiritual strength, who doesn't have a strong heart, a clean heart. Such a person who is not pure cannot understand. It doesn't mean physical strength, balahinena. It means that one must have the mercy of Lord Baladev, the giver of all spiritual strength. Then, one who is dear to the Lord can give the instructions of the Lord to a faithful student. So Vedic culture is also based on, in general, respect. Ultimately, respect of the Supreme Lord. And because, just like the wife respects the husband, because he's representative of God. The citizens respect the governor. They used to be kings. The king is respected because he's representative of God. And the disciple should listen to and respect the guru because he's representative of God. This is the substance, sum and substance, of spiritual Vedic culture. And Krishna's summing it up here. Just think of me always, be my devotee, work for me, and be submissive to me. Then I promise you, you'll leave this material entanglement and join me in the eternal spiritual world for eternal happiness. I promise you this, because I care for you. These are Krishna's words. That's all we have to read. If you want more details, you can read the rest of the Gita, but this is the summary. Okay, so I'll stop with that. But if anybody has any comments or questions, we can discuss. Eddie? Yes, sir.
Sometimes people say that maybe Krishna is demanding a little too much from us. Why is he asking us to pay obeisance to him, worship him?
Oh. Someone is doubting that that's too much, that Krishna is asking us to worship him? Well, okay, Krishna doesn't demand it. Those that don't want to bow down and don't want to worship him, he still reciprocates. He still takes care of them. He doesn't, you know, it's not like the electric company turns off your power because you don't pay the bill. The atheists who don't pay their bill, who don't reciprocate with Krishna, he still provides. The air is still coming to breathe. The sun is still rising in the morning for them. They're getting food every day. Even those who deny Krishna, he still takes care of them. So he's not demanding, you have to do this or I'll destroy you. But he's recommending, if you want to be happy, if you want to perfect your life, you should do it. So those who don't want to accept, okay, go on with their lives. But they're going to continue in material existence and never be fully happy. And everything they try to accumulate will be taken away from them, if not sooner, at least at the time of death. That's why we should accept what Krishna says and not think that it's too much. You know, it's asking too much that we should bow down and give Krishna what actually belongs to him. If we've read any Shastra, we should know. The Isha Upanishad says, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. Everything in this world belongs to God. So we should acknowledge that. We should agree, yes, I agree, everything belongs to God. Just like I rent a house, but I forget that someone else owns the house and I refuse to pay the rent. So he will go to court and have me removed for non-payment of rent. If we refuse to acknowledge that God is the proprietor of the things that we're using and claiming to be ours, then we're criminals. God is so merciful, he allows us to stay in the house even though we're not paying our rent. Yeah. He's tolerant. How tolerant he is. He doesn't evict us immediately. Of course, we eventually do get evicted. But then he provides another house. We take birth again in another body. He's so tolerant and so compassionate, even though we're denying his right. He owns everything. The body we're living in belongs to him. Why can't we just make a token sign of offering back to him what belongs to him? But we won't do that.
Yeah, but they sometimes say that only Krishna who is demanding this. The other gods and demigods, they don't say, you do this to me, you do that to me.
Sometimes they do. Maybe sometimes. Yes?
Something which is...
Well, okay, so Krishna is not like other gods. He's making more demands. He's just too demanding in comparison to other gods. He's doing it for our good. He's asking those things because we will be the profiter. We'll make the profit by following his recommendation. He doesn't need our head on the ground. You know, he doesn't need the ego boost. He's already self-satisfied. He doesn't need to be flattered. You know, it's not that he's, you know, an egomaniac that needs to be worshipped. It's for our good. We will become perfect. If we become attached to him and surrender to him, we won't be slaves of Maya anymore. We'll be free. So we should give up our foolish idea of freedom to become actually free. Give up our independence, then we'll become free. For our good. So therefore Krishna is demanding, or recommending, strongly, do it. and somebody else is not recommending some other god. First of all, because he's not the Supreme Lord, so he doesn't, you know, he's modest and intelligent enough not to demand, "I'm the Supreme Lord, surrender to me." They don't say it because they're not the Supreme Lord. But Krishna says it. He has every right to say it, and he's saying it for our good, more than his own. Okay.
And one sentence you told me, to give up the foolish idea of freedom for...
A foolish idea of independence, so you can actually become free. Prabhupada takes that verse, Atmavashyaya, Videyatma. Ragadvesha Vimukta is two. Vishayan Indraya is charan. Krishna is telling Arjuna that if your senses are free from attachment and repulsion, and you keep yourself mind and senses under control, then you can attain satisfaction and the mercy of the Lord. So Prabhupada translates this Videyatma. That means someone who's obedient to the injunctions of the Vedas. The Prabhupada's poetic translation is someone who follows the regulative principles of freedom. Accept regulations to become free. It makes sense. You know, you accept some discipline, some voluntary restriction on yourself, so that later on you can be free. You go to school, you work hard, you put aside the, the chance to go out on Friday night and enjoy. Instead, you stay home and study, work hard, then you get a good job. And then you're free. You don't have to hustle for money. You have a decent job, and you can enjoy life. So you discipline yourself so that in the end you can be free. Voluntarily. Krishna's recommending that. Okay. There's a question here on paper. Can you kindly explain why some devotees lose enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness over the period of time, and how to come out of this? Thank you. There are various reasons. Now, of course, someone can be falling down because of the serious reasons of either committing aparads against other devotees or becoming lax about following the regulative practices. If you don't follow the regular principles, if you don't chant your rounds, 16 rounds, you don't carry out the vows you took at initiation, that's falling down, and you're in trouble. And if you commit too many offenses against Vaishnavas, Krishna will become dissatisfied with you, and you have to be punished by Krishna's energy. But putting that aside, supposing you're following the program, you're not committing a lot of offenses, and still you feel discouraged. You're losing your enthusiasm. Various reasons may be there. Basically, it's because of unrealistic expectations. We didn't understand that it's not that easy. That it doesn't... it's not perfected overnight, necessarily. That it may be a lifetime endeavor to attain Krishna. And that... there may still be problems in this world. We experience difficulty and we get frustrated. But difficulty is always encountered, we're always encountered by difficulty in material life. Our bodies give us trouble, we get sick. Our minds give us all sorts of crazy ideas and bad feelings. They come involuntarily, just because of our prarabdha, the karma we've accumulated because of past activities. The mind and the body cause trouble. Other people, even other Vaishnavas, give us trouble. Obstruct us in our service. Do and say things that discourage us. Or prevent us from doing our service. This happens. Even other Vaishnavas give us trouble. What to speak of other living beings, the government, and people who don't like us, people to whom we owe money, and so on. And the nature, the demigods, are giving us trouble. The weather is bad. You know, and so many things happen, forces of nature. So there are so many troubles. And if we're not very strong in our determination, we can be frustrated. Just by the inevitable obstacles that will occur while still living in this world, we have to be determined. The formula is given by Lord Brahma, how to be a mature devotee. If you're not a Paramahamsa who can simply be oblivious to everything material, if you're still disturbed by what's going on in this world, including your own body and mind, then try to be a second-class devotee if you can't be first-class. A mature devotee. And that's described by Brahma in his prayers to Krishna. Tatte nukampa susamiksha manaha bunyena evatmakritam vipakam. A mature devotee, even though he's still suffering in this world, he doesn't get too discouraged. He's expecting that sooner or later, Krishna is going to relieve me of all this. He's going to show me his full mercy. I'm confident of that. It's just a matter of time. In the meanwhile, bunjana, the word buj means to enjoy, but in Sanskrit, it also means to suffer. You know, it depends on what it is. He tolerates, he accepts and suffers the reactions that he created for himself by his past activity. Atmakritam vipakam. He's mature and he recognizes whatever happens to him, good or bad, is his own fault. It's a reaction to things he's done in the past. It's nobody else's, what's happening to me is nobody else's fault but my own. That's a mature attitude. So I tolerate it. And I patiently expect that Krishna, when he's ready, will give me his full mercy and all these causes of disturbance will simply go away. Or at least I'll get the strength to rise above them. That's a mature attitude. And a devotee who has risen to that platform, even though he's not a Paramahamsa, he doesn't know, he hasn't experienced the full taste of love of God, he's not able to just ignore the material world. But he's determined and he's patient. And he's confident that Krishna will give his mercy. Then he doesn't become discouraged. We become discouraged because we haven't gotten to that stage yet. We're too easily... we take the abuse of Maya too seriously and we get discouraged. So we shouldn't. We should try to be mature. Patient, determined, and confident. That this process does work. That takes knowledge. If we're just motivated by sentiment, by what feels good, then when it inevitably doesn't feel good all the time, we'll get discouraged and maybe give up. But if we're motivated by knowledge that this is the right thing, I must do it no matter what difficulty it involves, then we won't give up. We won't be discouraged. Okay? I'm sorry, is that your question? Or? I'm talking, yeah, I'm addressing it to you, but I don't know who gave the question. Okay, is there anything else? Okay, he rose his hand first, and I'll get to you. Yes, sir.
Why is it advised to become a servant of the servant of the servant of Supreme Personality of Godhead?
That pleases Krishna more. It pleases Krishna more to approach his servant than to try to approach him directly. And if you approach the servant of the servant of the servant as many times removed as you can, that pleases Krishna the most. You want to meet the chief minister, don't just barge into his office. Make an appointment with his secretary. You know, that will please him. You know, we try to barge in on Krishna directly. He's not satisfied with that. Who are you? You know, what is your business? But when we make a proper appointment through his devotee, then Krishna is satisfied. And it's that attitude, humble attitude of service to the Vaishnavas, which impresses Krishna the most. Okay? Yes, sir?
No, my question is...
Okay.
Durga Devi is working under the instructions of the Supreme Lord Krishna.
Yes.
In the material world. Now, if somebody is worshipping Durga Devi, generally it is said that the devotees of demigods have material motives.
Yes.
To approach them. But if unmotivated, if somebody is approaching Durga Devi and worshipping her, taking a lot of austerities, tapasya, then is she impressed enough to direct him to the Supreme Lord that no, this is unknowingly if he does that?
Okay, I'll sum that up for those who couldn't hear it. If someone's worshiping Durga Devi faithfully, is she going to turn that devotee over to Krishna? Is she going to recommend him to Krishna? In some cases, when the gopis of Vrindavan, the young girls, did the Katyayani Vrata, they prayed to her. Katyayani namostu te. What is it? Krishna me. Anyway, please make Krishna my husband. They were praying. So that Katyayani granted. Because they worshipped her as the servant, as a maidservant of Krishna. And they came with the attitude that you can request Krishna. You have access to Krishna. Please ask him to give us his mercy. If you approach Durga Devi or any demigod with that attitude, that they're servants of Krishna, then they will lead you to Krishna. But if you treat the deity, the demigod, as independent and supreme, it won't work. You'll get something, but you won't get Krishna. It is aparad against Krishna to consider anybody else independent and supreme. Just like you go to the secretary of the minister and pay him a bribe to do the work, ignoring the minister, treating him as if he was independent, it doesn't work. It's criminal. The secretary is simply the representative of his master, and you have to recognize that, or else it's criminal. So we approach the demigods as servants of Krishna. That's proper and an effective way to get the mercy of Krishna. Serve the servant of the servant. The demigods are the servants of Krishna. So serve them as servants, not as independent. Okay? So I think we can stop here. Okay, one last question, yes?
When you're doing devotional service, what happens to when one grows very old and becomes diseased? But how does one continue to be very strong in Krishna consciousness and to keep the goal in mind? Because the body gives so many, just as you were mentioning, that the body starts dwindling and giving so many diseases. But how
yes.
does one, the consciousness level goes down? How does the devotee keep that consciousness really focused? Even during all the whatever period of time of life is there,
yes.
totally focused on Krishna
yes.
and the Vaishnavas. How does one do that?
So how does a devotee keep himself focused on serving Krishna when he's getting old and the body's getting weaker? That is more difficult.
And one cannot do much of active devotion.
Yes, you can't,
yes.
especially you
yes.
can't do what you used to do.
Right.
One has to practice. One has to begin his practice as early as possible. You know, don't put it off till the last days of your life to give yourself to God. If we practice most of our life, then we'll become too weak when our mind even starts to fail. It happens. You know, a person who's 50 years old cannot remember the things he knew when he was 20. Certainly can't memorize very easily. What to speak of when you're 80 years old. But if we practice before that, if possible, if we were fortunate to start our devotional service early enough, then we develop our relationship with Krishna, and Krishna takes care of us. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Don't do that. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhi yuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyam. For those who serve me regularly, constantly, I take care of them. I give them everything they need, and I preserve what they have. So Krishna will make up for all our deficiencies. If we've been trying to serve him, then when there's some difficulty, just by old age, or for any other reason, sickness, or just some disability, or just obstacles, even without getting sick and old, circumstances in our life can change, and we can't do the same service we used to do. Maybe there'll be some change in the external world, some political change, and we're not allowed, under the new regime, to openly practice Krishna consciousness. Things can happen. Krishna takes care of his devotees. And he, if at that time of death we cannot remember Krishna, Krishna will force himself into our consciousness. The example is of Haridas Thakur, who was getting very old. One day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he did every day, came to visit Haridas. Haridas was lying in his bed during the day, unusual, because he used to chant 22 hours a day on his japa beads. You don't usually see him lying in bed during the day. He only slept less than 2 hours in the night. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Haridas, are you well? Is there any problem? Haridas said, my body is okay, but I can't chant all my rounds. He used to chant 3 lakhs or more, 3 lakhs of japa every day. 300,000 names of Krishna. And he couldn't maintain his vow anymore. So he was despondent. Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry. Just relax. You don't have to. Now you're old. You don't have to follow the same vow. I excuse you. But Haridas said, I'm sorry. You know, I cannot stay in this body anymore. And I don't want to be here when you leave your pastime. So please let me leave my body now. So anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first of all, excused him. No problem. Also, Sanatana Goswami used to do the Govardhan Parikrama, not the 21 kilometers. He used to go further around, the further outside perimeter, 40 kilometers every day around Govardhan. And when he was getting old, he couldn't do it anymore. You know, it was just physically too much. So Krishna came to him and told him, gave him a Govardhan Shila. He said, you take this Shila and circumambulate that stone 4 times every day, and it will be equal to doing the whole parikrama. That Shila is there now in Jiva Goswami's temple of Radhadamodar, given to Sanatana Goswami by Krishna himself, telling his devotee, okay, you're old now, you can't follow the same regulations. Don't worry, I excuse you, just do what you can. Okay? Yes,
Prabhu? Less of austerity in Krishna consciousness when age advances.
Yeah, just like at least Madhvacharya said, Ekadashi should be observed as a strict fast by every male between the age of 8 and 80. 80. So after 80, you don't have to fast. Only 72 years of fasting. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.